Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. This time we're doing part two. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we're back. It's another week. It's much nicer out this weekend than it was last weekend. No way less windy.
Yeah, no spooky sounds. Way less spooky. No spooky sounds, which is fine. It's a gorgeous day, man. I was, you know me, I was up at the ass crack of dawn this morning.
Yeah, because you're a freak.
Yep. Up at 5:30 and got my bike ride in and just a whole bunch of chores done all this morning. Man, what a great, great day.
Just thinking about Dune in the morning.
Yeah, I read some Dune.
Well, I say we just get into some Dune.
That is what we are here to do.
Yep, we are here to talk about Dune. Minute by minute, second by second, even sometimes. It's a little foreshadowing for later on in the week. Let's pick up where we left off. Last week we started the movie. We had our exposition from Irulan last weekend. We saw Shaddam, we got to see where we got to catch back up to where Paul was with the Fremen. We learned from Martin Soul of Dune Volume 2 that this scene picks up mere hours after where we left off with the end of Dune Part 1. And it seems that all of the Fremen have just kind of abandoned Paul and Jessica for a moment.
Yeah.
Until they decided to just also escape the oncoming Harkonnen soldiers.
Well, Paul and Jessica are like hangers on at this moment. You know, they're dead weight.
Yeah.
I think even the wrapped up body of Jameis is less dead weight than Paul.
Jameis to go. Yeah.
Is less dead weight than Paul and Jessica, which
is actually ironic because he's dead.
Yeah, yes. Thank you. That is the joke. Thanks. Sorry. We're referring to them as PB and J now.
Yeah. PB and J. I forgot.
This minute, we are of course talking about minute 5 through 6. This episode and this minute really is all about rocks, John.
Yep.
It's a lot of rocks. Rocks play a big part of this minute, whether you're crouching behind them, falling from them, or being hit in the head with them. Rocks are an integral part of this minute.
Honestly, rocks are an integral part of this week.
It's true.
There's a lot of rocks this week. So, let's talk about rocks.
Let's do it.
So we left off, with Paul and Jessica, like kind of pressing themselves against this rock wall to try and like blend in and hide as much as they could.
Yep.
We start this minute with Jessica, like resting her hand on her belly, almost protecting Alia.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she's just, I don't know, instinctively doing it. We kind of see Paul just like barely stick his head out from behind to just kind of get an eye on things, see what's going on.
Yeah.
And then we just get huge drums, just a boom boom.
Yeah.
Thank you, Raul Vega. I believe this is one of the moments where his trash cans came into play.
Hell yeah.
And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to our summer school episode where we talked to Raul about the music behind Dune and making all of that.
I can't not hear trash cans now.
I, as you and everyone that listens knows, went back like 5 seconds mm-hmm. over and over, and I was like, these sound like trash cans.
Yep.
So
one of my percussion performances in high school was a trash can number.
Yeah.
We did for like a,
did solo like a ensemble. Stomp knockoff kind of thing.
Sort of. Yeah. It wasn't was not near as much like dancing and choreography, but sure. It was, just the metal, the classic metal trash cans that we beat the hell out of.
My high school had something like that as well, because it was the mid late 2000s.
Yep, of course.
And my band teacher was really big into like the whole stomp thing and like the whole Blue Man Group thing, minus the choreography. Do you remember what your high school group's like name for that was? Because ours was Urban Groove, but it was GRU with the umlaut V over it because it was cool.
No, I don't, but I probably still have the sheet music for it.
I distinctly remember, you know, the radio antennas that are like triangular shaped and they're made out of aluminum
No.
Okay.
With a triangle shape.
So it's triangle shaped. This is great for our listeners.
An audio format.
But it's triangle shaped. It's a triangle shaped pillar going up, okay. And it's got like all these cross support beams and stuff. The point was, is that
like a house antenna or like a car antenna,
like a house antenna, like you would see like a dude that has just like a hobby ham radio.
Yeah.
Setup
kind of antenna. Okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking. I was thinking car antennas.
No. So I distinctly remembered that being my percussive instrument, but we also had like plastic 55 gallon drums people would like hit with rubber mallets. Anyways,
Stop. It's good. Get into it.
Shout out to Raul Vega.
So we hear these drums and, we see a Harkonnen soldier start to crest the dune. And he sees, Jameis to go sitting down there, just right where the Fremen and Paul and Jessica left them.
I hate when I leave my to go box behind.
Oh God, that's happened to me. That is a sad feeling. You get home, you're so looking forward to these leftovers, and it's just, nope, left it on the table.
Fuck.
So we finally get some subtitles for the Harkonnen language. We've been hearing it in the background, and it's just, you know, unintelligible to us.
A series of grunts.
Yeah, exactly. So the subtitles come up and say they're close, which makes sense. We see the footprints. We see their water wrapped up, Jameis wrapped up.
Yeah.
Don't get too ahead of myself.
Yeah. Minute by minute, Zach.
Yeah, sorry. We finally get a good look at the Harkonnen soldier. Do these still suits or their uniforms look different here than they did in the first movie to you? They look a little more like, well, more black, and a little more like sleek looking.
There definitely appears to be a increase in budget for additional suits.
Right. Okay.
Specifically because we notice, and I don't know if it's this minute or later on, but we notice the same like fan on the back of the helmet that we saw at the start.
A couple of seconds from now.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Perfect. But yeah, it definitely seems like there's a bit more
detail
involved.
Yeah.
That said, the only time we saw Harkonnens in the daytime in Dune Part 1 was the very beginning of the movie where we saw Rabin angrily looking over the Harkonnen fleet leaving Arrakis.
Right. Okay.
Because otherwise they were all at night.
Okay. So that makes sense. All right. Yeah.
Saying that Arrakis isn't hostile at nighttime, but I don't think they need full still suits.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, cool. Yeah, just a little thing that I noticed.
But also, the Harkonnens probably have horrible water discipline, so...
Yeah.
You know.
Well, they are armed to the teeth, these Harkonnen soldiers. We get to see some rifles, which I don't think we saw too much of in the first movie.
Nope.
If at all. Some menacing-looking rifles. They all have, or at least the ones we've seen, have blades at their waist, on their hip. So they are ready for combat. This soldier, as he's cresting the dune, cresting the top of the dune, notices the tracks and, starts leading him towards PB&J as they are cowering down next to their rocks.
I would say they're hunkering down.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Tomato, tomato.
Paul's a brave boy.
Yes, he is.
He's a big, strong boy.
This is where we get the shot of the cooler fan on the back.
Yeah.
I love that little addition. It's so neat.
Look, as a resident of the South, I can relate to having a cooler fan available to blow fresh air onto your head.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
At all times.
I mean, you go to any Braves game or baseball game at all, in the peak of the summer, you're going to see people carrying these little fans around.
I want those fucking Mr. fans.
Oh yeah. Like the necklace ones that you don't even have to carry. Those things, they look silly. They look absolutely silly. But if it's 98 degrees out and you know, a 50% humidity rate,
50, okay. Motherfucker, try like 65, 70,
whatever.
It's a blanket of water. That's just on top of us.
Yeah. I don't care how dumb I look. Those fans save lives.
Yeah, you look stupid in solidarity with everyone else. Yeah,
absolutely. So I wanted to get your opinion on something right here.
Yes.
the question is this a continuity error or is this not a continuity error? So as we see the Harkonnen start to walk down the dune towards Paul and Jessica, PB&J.
Yeah.
He's got his rifle drawn.
Yes.
And then it cuts to a shot of PB&J looking Correct. Scared. And then it cuts back to the soldier and his rifle is slung on his back. Now it could, the in-universe explanation is that a couple of seconds have passed. He could have just, you know, whipped it around his back in order to draw his sword, which he does here in a moment. But those shots are so quick. It felt like a continuity error to me.
Sure. I think because you and I both have time around firearms, and we know how quickly you can, you know, string one up over your shoulder and hang it up. I think it's a fair assessment that this Harkonnen soldier knows that he is entering in a close combat area and it is more beneficial to him to be ready to draw his sword at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Now, is that me imposing my personal life experiences with, you know, firearms and, you know, readying and unreadying with them to then justify a possible editing or production error in a movie? Absolutely. Entirely.
Absolutely.
But
okay. I think we're on the same page.
But I think it's safe to say that these soldiers at least are trained to know when their gun, when their firearm is appropriate and when their blade is appropriate for combat.
Okay, that's fair. I think we're on the same page, though.
Yeah.
So the Harkonnen draws his sword and Paul reaches down.
He's frantically looking around.
He finds a good rock.
He finds a great rock. It's like the size of his fist. He can still wrap his fingers around it and get a good grip. I think he kind of bashes the ground with it.
Yeah, he palms this rock, which is no easy feat. I mean, that's
I have small hands.
That's some good grip strength on Paul. Yeah, and it's a good bashing rock, which I think that's the idea. This is going to be a good bashing rock.
Yeah. Look, you always need a good bashing rock.
That's true. That's true. And then we get a soft grunt to close out the minute. The subtitles say grunt softly right at the minute mark.
That is me every morning when I wake up.
It's a lot of rocks. A lot of rocks to kick off the week. We got some crouching rocks.
We're not even close to being done with rocks.
No. Cool. Anything from the Art and Soul on this minute?
Nothing for this minute.
Okay.
No, I think Art and Soul, we don't really get back to Art and Soul until later in the week, near the end of the week. So.
And this was all still shot in Jordan, correct?
Yes. This was all part of that super tight sequence of planned shots to make sure that the sun's continuity of shadows and everything is still in play.
Now, and I don't know if you know this from reading, but there was considerable time between the filming of part one and the filming of part two.
Yes.
So they went back to the same locations, I'm assuming.
Yeah. This is all in Wadi Rum again. And
there's
other places in Jordan and the UAE where they were filming. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, just that orange glow that we're getting off of everything is just super, super cool.
Love it. Well, that's all thanks to the infrared filter on the camera lenses that they were using. So, but yeah, nothing from Art and Soul there. So I think because none of this happens in the books, I think I think that's where we end for now.
Okay, cool. Well, why don't you take us out with some socials?
Of course, we are online in a few different places. You can email duneminute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We are also available on Blue Sky at duneminute.com. And we will be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute.
All right, cool. We will see y'all tomorrow.
See you later.